my mind. Though it seems so long, it's not a distant past. You wanna know why, I'll tell you how. This is my reply, we
morning, and thank all of you for tuning in on today's show. I'm James Bishop Tutman, your host, and we thank you for tuning in to radio, gpgradio.com. This morning, we're so blessed to have with us a phenomenal artist, producer, songwriter, goes by the name of Park Stewart. How you doing, Park?
I'm doing good, Bishop. It's my pleasure, man, to join you today. I thank you for the invitation.
Man, thank you for accepting the invitation. We're so excited and blessed, as I mentioned earlier, to have you on our show. And we're just going to jump right into it. We got a lot of fans out there that really love your music. And we just kind of want to, we're going to start there, man. Like I said in the introduction, you're an artist, you're a producer, you're a songwriter. Is there any one of those that you really lean more to, that you enjoy more than the other, or are they equal to you?
I want to say that they all are equal in its own way, but I think the singing gives me, is more cathartic for me, because as I deliver the message, the feeling of the anointing that flows through is cathartic for me. You know, as I bring healing to people through the word, it's healing for me too. And it's kind of like, you know, I preach too, so the preaching gives you that direct way to have impact to the listeners. You know, it says faith come by hearing. And the thing about singing is it takes that same format, but it puts it with a melody. And that melody tends to linger with sound. And when people can't remember words, they can remember a melody. And then it kind of links them to the words, you know, just like it did in the Bible when Moses wrote, it's called Moses' Song, when he wrote those stories or the history down of the testimony of the Israelites, he put it in the form of a song, so it'll be easy for everyone to remember. So I think it's the same concept. So I kind of love them all the same, but that's just more cathartic, the preaching and the singing, but the singing more so because it's melodic, you know?
Yeah, I love that answer. And I tell people, you know, don't ever underestimate the power of music. I believe that you can sing someone to salvation as well as preach someone to salvation. I know some of my constituents probably, they may frown at that, but I wholeheartedly believe that the word could be preached through a melody. So I love that.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I agree with you totally, Bishop. I do.
I appreciate that, Parks. I appreciate that. So you're a Detroit man, and it's a well-established history of music in Detroit. Gospel and secular. Let's talk about some of your influences. Who are some of the people that influenced you? How did you get started in the industry?
I got started, well, my father, when I was younger, you know, I wasn't raised in church. I was raised on the streets of Detroit. And my father introduced me to all types of genre of music. You know, I heard old Motown, I heard jazz, even some country western, Sam Cooke, Marvin Gaye, Donny Hathaway, Otis Redding, you know, Temps, Dramatics, Four Tops, all Motown, you know, Aretha. And for some reason, when I was a child, it really caught my attention. I love Sam Cooke, and I love Marvin Gaye. So my father introduced me to all that music, man, all the older, you know. So when I was younger, and I was like 3 and 4 years old, man, it was in my ear. And from 4 years on, that's all I ever heard was the music that he played. And he introduced me to jazz when I was like maybe nine or 10 years old. And something in my soul kind of connected to the music was there. I didn't understand it then, but I would understand it later. I think it was God placing those melodies and giving me, I call them melodies for heaven. They kind of travel through the annals of time. You know, if you hear it sound, then you hear Nat King Cole. You know, if you hear Marvin, you hear Sam. You know, you hear Marvin, you hear Elder Barge. You know, you can pick out the different influences that's traveling through the annals of time. And I was fortunate enough to have that wealth of music presented to me by my father. Then I was in a singing group in high school, and I was singing secular music, and I met Levi Stubbs at the Four Tops. And he wanted to do something with my group then, and we were called Positive Motivation was the name of our group. And we was New Edition before there was a New Edition.
I like it.
That's what we were. And he wanted to record, and I was around, I think I was 19 then. And I just happened to go to a church one day, man, and gave my life to Christ. And I remember telling the guys that I didn't want to sing secular music anymore, because I was told that I couldn't. I was told then, I was like, you can't do secular music. You got to just do, you know, gospel music. And that's when I was kind of introduced to Eric Bryce, who was a childhood friend of mine who played guitar, played for Chaka Khan and Stephanie Mills and Babyface and a whole lot of secular artists. And he was also on the church side. He played for Thomas Whitfield and the Clarks. And I recorded my first songs then with Eric Bryce. We went in the studio and recorded some songs, and the record labels told us it was too progressive. And this was before Commission, at least 3 or 4 years before Commission. And they were saying it was too progressive. He said he loved the direction it was going. He said, but he thought it was too progressive for the time, that they wouldn't accept it. Isn't that something, huh? And I really didn't know a lot about gospel music. All I knew was R&B, because that's where I came from. So I wasn't fitting a genre. I was just doing what was in my heart to do. And one day I went and saw some guys singing, and it was called The Testimonials, which was the Winans. And I looked at that group, and I said, hey, man, that's what I do. And I said, man, and then the Winans came out, and they had a hit. And I met Marvin Gaye's producer when he heard my two demo songs, and he said, I've only heard that sound once before. And he closed his eyes, and I said, well, who? He said, I heard it once before. He said, that's Marvin Gaye. And at that time, I was blown away. You know, you can't, because nobody can compare to Marvin Gaye. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They just blew me away, because he produced the man. You know, he wrote songs. He knew him very well. And it kind of blew me away. You know, I didn't even tell anybody that for years, because I didn't want them to think I was crazy, you know.
Right, right.
Man said, you might have a Marvin Gaye, you know. Later on, I started
big,
to understand,
man.
But he heard the spirit, the soul of a man, the expression of the soul when it's captured in music and the lyrical content, and it keeps the purity of the melody of the heavens, it will impact. And I started to understand, and from that point I went to writing for Commission. I met Mitch and Fred and the different ones, and me and Mitch, we played ball together. Before we knew each other, everybody said, y'all sound alike, you act alike. He needed to meet me, I needed to meet him. When we met each other, we just clicked. And that's the same way I met Mark, and playing ball. And his brother played keyboard, and he's been co-producing a lot of the songs that I've ever done. Me and Mo work hand in hand. He's also done work with Commission. So it's a small group of people, but it's very tight. You know, there was Mark, there was Mo, there's Eric Bryce, there's a whole bunch of musicians that were younger than us. They was a little younger than me, then was some younger than them that they mentored, and it kind of kept going. And Detroit was so well-rounded with different artists, you know, Thomas Whitfield, the Winans, the Clarks, Derek Brinkley, Chris Jones, Oscar Hayes, you know, it was just so many, man. Michael Brooks had his groups, and the Young Artists of Christ, where we met John P. Key, and, you know, it was just like a boom, just like Motown. It's the same thing with gospel music, you know. But I never lost my, I never tried to link into what was gospel, what wasn't. I just did the music that I felt like God gave me. And a lot of people said it had an R&B flavor to it. Well, that made sense since that's where I came from. But I never really put it in a category. People did that for me. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, that soulful sound is definitely in your music. I love it. It's that it reminds me of that smooth Motown sound. I'm pretty sure you've heard that before. And the lyrics of your music is so so deep and heartfelt. I feel like you do a good job of trying to link humanity and spirituality all at once. And if I just think you're one of the most gifted songwriters there is. I mean, your content is just amazing. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you saying that. And I tell people all the time, you know, you listen to Stevie Wonder, Donny Hathaway, and, you know, Sam and Marvin Gaye. You know, you start hearing more than just words. You seeing how they're phrasing it. You understand that their heart is wearing what they're saying, and you hit it right on the head, linking humanity to spirituality. And so the people could understand what our purpose is. The expression of the soul is what I call it. Uncontaminated. And when it's given in its pure form, it will impact the world. And so I listen and I tell you a funny story. And I first started writing on the gospel side. The Lord had given me like 3 songs. And I sit down at my dining room table one day and I was crying. And I told the Lord, I said, well, Marvin Winans, who is one of my favorite singers and writers, you know, I was listening to him, and, you know, him and Andre Crouch and Walter Hawkins. I'm listening to these songs, and when I listened to Marvin Winans, I said, well, Lord, I said, all his stuff is scripture-based. And the Lord stopped me, and I told me to put my songs on, and I put them on. And every time a verse went by, he said, he gave me the scripture for it. Then he went to the next one and gave me the scripture for it. And when he did it, all I could do was cry. But I was young. I didn't know. I didn't have anybody to explain to me how church went, you know, what it was. So I was having doubts about, you know, people receiving the way I did it. And the Lord was showing me, as long as I'm there, he said, with love and kindness have I drawn them. He said, you give the message pure, I'll draw. I'll do the drawing. It's a gift from God. You know, I can't take credit. It's just like anything else. You lock in. I have a gift to write. I could probably write 10, 15 songs a day, Lord willing. But being inspired is a whole different thing, you know. And so every song that I write, I'm trying to write from inspiration of the Holy Spirit, you know, and what God wants to say to his people and what people need to hear to lift up their spirits. And to have an awakening, a social conscience, and who we are supposed to be spiritually. And the Lord has just blessed me to do that, man.
Well, you kind of touched on what I was going to ask you next was, you know, what motivates or inspires Parks to write a song? I mean, could you kind of, you know, give us a little more insight on that? You say you could write 10 to 15 songs. I mean, that's incredible. Do you have to be in a dark room? Does it have to be
driving
in your car?
No, well, what I meant by that is, you know, like some people, man, the gift will work. You know, you could sit down and I could put some rhymes together and do it, but it wouldn't be inspired. But, you know, I don't have to be in a dark room. It's like my experience. I went through divorce when I was younger. I went through I was brought up on the streets of Detroit. I thought I was going to die by the age of 35, 40. I never thought I'd see that. And, you know, I've seen a lot of things in my life. So the writing comes from experience. And then God offering the solution or reaching his hand out and say, I've been with you all the time. Let's get people from this point of where you come from to where they need to go. And so it's basically just like when you preach a message, it may come to you and then to the people. You know, some things hit home with you, and then, you know, the people get to enjoy it also. But sometimes you'll preach yourself out of your discouragement. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. And
it's the same. It's the same thing. My valley experiences helped me relate to those that were in the valley, in order for God to understand that, yeah, they walk through the valley of the shadow of death, that he's with them. So the basis of everything that I do is based on in him we live, move, and have our being, and the demonstration of the power of his love. You can wrap it up in that. And that's how I feel. It's people. I love his people. I want to be able to impact and in some way cause people to see and feel the love of God. Whether I'm talking it, preaching it, or singing it, whatever avenue he gives me. And then I'm just constantly trying to be the change that I want to see.
Wow. Thank you for that. You spoke a little bit about, you know, growing up on the streets of Detroit, and you mentioned your divorce. And I have to ask, I mean, you've been in this industry for a while. And during that course, I mean, did you ever get a point to where, you know, you hit a wall to say, you know what, I'm done. I want to do something different. This is not working out for me. Did you ever get to a point to where you just wanted to quit or throw in the towel as it pertains to this industry?
Oh, man, more than once. I've ever, you know, anybody that's ever did this on this level, I'll just use myself. I won't speak for everybody else. Let me just speak for me. Yes, more than once. And a lot of it was frustration. A lot of it was growing pain. And then a lot of it was trying to understand that the industry and spirituality are diametrically opposed to one another.
Wow.
You're trying to crack through a system of agendas, politics. And I thought that the gospel arena would be different, but it's still secular. Adverse secular figures in gospel music, and I don't want to separate and say just because a person's in church it's good, because most of my opposition came from church because they said the music was too progressive, and then the world loved it, but at the same time all I got from those labels was, man, it's too much conviction in it. We love the songs, but it's too much conviction. And then I was going to the churches and they were saying, oh, it's too secular. Oh, he's the gospel babyface. Oh, he's too worldly. It was always some type of critique, you know, that you had to fight through. And when you don't have a strong foundation, sometimes you want to throw your hands up at it, but it just be like Jeremiah said, you know, it was like fire shut up in my bone. The thing that I thought I wanted to quit was the thing that brought me through. Without it, I wouldn't be here. It caused me to live and caused me to continue on. You know, I think I had a David experience in a sense of where he said he encouraged himself in the Lord.
Yes, sir.
And I wrote a song and I was sitting in my room, and it was just around before I was going to get a divorce. And I had one of those moments where I was like, man, you know what? I'm done. And I got a letter in the mail, and the mail's in the, I opened up the letter, and the letter said that they was going to commit suicide. And they listened to the songs I wrote, and the song saved their lives. And I was sitting there contemplating suicide myself. Isn't that something? Yeah.
Wow.
So I learned younger, you know, the power of God. And so a lot of people wouldn't be transparent. They said, well, it's a preacher thinking about committing suicide. I was younger then. But if you don't have a, if you don't have the connection of why we do what we do and the full meaning of the purpose of why we are here, you can slip off to the dark side. And I think the Lord allowed me to journey there just for a bit so I would understand that no matter where I go in the abyss of heartache or trouble, that He's always there. And
yes, sir.
I pen many songs in that area. Ordinary just won't do. I am here. Cry on. These are all songs, you know, Hold Me. Was birthed in struggles and things of that nature where God lifted me, you know, and came there and comforted me. And that's what I wanted to share with the world. And I think that's what people hear when they hear the songs. They're feeling all those things of the experience. The Bible said patience, experience hope. So the experience that He gave me allowed me to talk about the hope that was in me and give hope to others that heard it.
Wow, so deep, man, so deep. Thank you so much for your transparency. I really appreciate that. You're listening to the James Bishop Tubman Radio Show on GPGRadio.com. We're here with Park Stewart, and he's dropping some heavy knowledge on us this morning, and we're so appreciative. Well, you kind of teased us a little bit with some of the songs. I was going to ask you, just so our audience can understand how big of a heavy hitter you are, just rattle off some of the songs you've written and some of the people you've written for or maybe worked with so they can just hear the resume that you've accumulated over these years.
Cry On with Commission, 112 for the Biggie, Notorious Big tribute. Cry On, R&B group Silk, Dave Hollister for the movie Blank Man, Ordinary Just Won't Do, No More Loneliness, Hold Me, I Am Here, Victory, Help Me to Help Somebody, I Love Thinking of You, You Can Depend on What You Do for Christ. That's just a few with Commission, and Yolanda Adams, More Than a Melody, Open Arms, and I've worked with John P. Key,
Wow.
Earl Klugh, Parliament Funkadelic, Four Tops,
Wow.
Temptations.
You're killing me, man.
You know, many more, man. So, you know, it's a thing, you know. I'm just honored and blessed to be able to share the gift with the world, man, to somehow just be a blessing, man.
Yeah. So y'all heard all the artists, the songs that he written, and that's not all of them, but I just want you to know the magnitude of this man's work and what a blessing he is for us to have in this day and time. You mentioned Cry On for 112, that tribute to Biggie, I believe, if memory serves me correct, man, that was over 4 million copies sold for that tribute, man. That's amazing.
Yes,
to have that on your resume.
You know, it's funny because Mitch, my writing partner, Mitchell Jones, is also in commission. When we did Cry On, you know, I took it to him, and Mitch has an uncanny way of putting certain chords with certain melodies. He was melodic and I was melodic. And I still remember sitting at the piano with him and him pecking out them chords. And he would say, go here. And we said, oh, that's it right there. And I remember he went to church that Sunday after we had went over the song a few times. He went to church and he came back and his bishop had preached. He said, you know, he said, man, can we put in there something about gold without fire? You know, how you come forth as pure gold. And we opened up the word and I was familiar with the scripture. I just wanted to read it, and we just put it in there. That became our second verse. And, you know, it was just amazing how much fun we had doing things together and the fellowship. And, you know, a lot of times people don't know how that works. And I tell people all the time, when you hear your lyrical content, I'm a lyricist. That's my strong point is I'm a lyricist. You know, I'm a melody man, harmony man, and lyrics is my thing, you know. And I think he puts you with certain people who understand or who can express what you express. That's kind of why I work with certain musicians like Mo Woodsett, Cordell, Aaron Lindsay. And Aaron Lindsay was young when I worked with him, but he just, it's just something about it. And when they merge together, you get something special. And I just thank the Lord for being able to have that, you know, and to be able to give people something of substance. You know, I think that's one of the things that's kind of lacking today is lyrical content with expression of the soul. I think we are more technically sound than we ever been. We have people that can sing better than they ever could, play better than they ever could, but how to connect that as an expression of the soul, I think is kind of what's missing.
Wow, that's heavy, man. And I would have to agree with you. Listening to your music and comparing it to some of the stuff, and I'm not throwing shade, as they say, on the artist today. You can tell the difference, most definitely. You mentioned commission, and we want to talk about commission a little bit, but we're going to do it after we take this break. And I want the listeners to listen to one of my favorite songs that you penned for commission. It's Ordinary Just Won't Do. So we're going to take a listen to Ordinary Just Won't Do by Commission, and then we're going to come right back and continue with our conversation with Mr. Park Stewart. This is James Bishop Tubman on GPGRadio.com.
Someone
Again on the James Bishop Tubman Radio Show, GPGRadio.com with Mr. Park Stewart. And hopefully you enjoyed. I know you enjoyed Ordinary Just Won't Do by Commission, song penned by Parks. A phenomenal piece of work. And we just want to talk a little bit about Commission, man. How did you get hooked up with Commission?
I got hooked up with Commission. Actually, I had a friend, and his name was Danny Burchett, but his name is Ishan, but we call him Danny Burchett. Him, Fred Hammond, Mitchell Jones, and Michael Williams all went to the same church. And his wife went to my church, and I met him, and he had a group that had Fred Hammond and Mitchell Jones, and the name of the group was called Saved. And so I heard him sing a couple of times, but I never got a chance to meet him. And I actually met Carl Reed. We was playing ball on my church team against his church team. And I met Carl Reed in the gym. And he didn't know I sang, and I didn't know he sang. And so actually, Carl is the first one that I ever sat down and talked to. And then I saw Keith at an event that I sung at. And we rapped for a little bit. And they kept telling me, man, you gotta hook up with Mitch, man. You got to meet Mitch. And one day I went to their church, and I knew that Fred could sing because I heard Fred singing. You know, Fred, man, bad man. Fred been bad all his life. You know, playing the singing, man, he was cold, man. He was cold. And I heard Mitch for the first time, man, and I fell in love with his voice, man, and we talked afterwards. I think the next day we went hooping. We went to go play some ball, man, and we was connected ever since, man. We go play ball, you know, we get something to eat, you know, shower. I meet him at his house, man, and we started penning songs, and I was penning songs with Eric Bryce. He's like a member of Commission. There was Michael Wright, and there was Eric Bryce. Both play guitar, but Bryce wrote "Don't Worry With Me" and "You Can Depend on Jesus." And so it was a connection all the way around, but Mitch introduced my songs to Commission, and they had their first album out. And actually, Fred had told me before, he said, you know, you would have been in this group. He said, I just didn't know. He said that you sung falsetto. He said, but Carl sung falsetto. He said, so we had the group. So I became like the official guy, sixth guy, so to speak, as people called me, because me and Mitch were like brothers. We hang all the time. And then me and Fred, we just had a different type of relationship. Me and Fred, to this day, me and Fred don't talk about music that much. When we talk, we usually talk about life. We talk about life. And then you had Keith, who was the youngest, and Carl, that's my man. Very talented guys, man. We were just young, and God just gave us a gift. And what we did was we fellowshiped. There was so much love there. And fellowship, I think it just came out in the songs, you know, because we really enjoyed it. We didn't know what we was doing, the magnitude of it. We just knew we loved doing it. And we just wanted to enjoy one another. And we loved doing the music. You had Michael Brooks, Michael Williams, Michael Wright was there before he left. And man, the fellowship was just great. And I met them all, but when we all met up at the studio and began to record, it just turned into something special, man. It was special all the way around. You had all those different blends of influences. You had Michael Brooks, who was a Chicago fan, Thomas Whitfield fan, James Taylor fan, you know what I mean? You had Fred Hammond and Mitch Motown, and everybody in Mitch's family can sing. And Fred with his different influences of Motown, Donnie Hathaway, Stevie. And we all had so much in common when those sounds came together, man, and the blends came together. It was just something special. Then you had the Dawkins boys that came, you know, Eric, another bad cat, man, and Anson, super writer, man, and multi-talent. These guys are so talented. I knew them when they were young, and I remember meeting them in Ohio, and they asked me, what could I do, or could I do something, or could I, they had tape that they wanted to hear. I said, you know, you really need to talk to is you need to talk to Fred. And they talked to Fred later on, and Fred heard some of their stuff, and they were in, you know. And then had Dietrich Hatton, he used to come by my house all the time, and I would mentor Dietrich and different guys at my church. And you know, it was just fun all the way around, man. It was this one tight knit group, and I think we looked up to everybody. You had the Winans, you had BB, and I met BB at a college one day and didn't even know who he was. And we sat down, and I told him, I said, man, you sound like these guys, the Winans. He said, these Winans? And he started playing Questionnaires. And that was my first encounter with him. So it was just a group. Fred was playing for the Winans. They had a separate group, Mitch and then Keith. Carl had a group called Sounds of Joy. All of a sudden, Brooks had another group, and they all got together. And I met all of them at different times, not knowing that eventually they was going to form a group. I met Brooks at the Winans studio when he was playing for the Winans. And also with, and then finally when I met them all, and we all got together up there, man, it was just, the rest, as they say, was history, man. But I really love working with him. I really enjoyed the journey, man. I just think that, man, just special times that you can't put into words. Multi-talented guys, multi-talented writers, everybody, talent, you know. I mean, this talent that I can't even express, man, you know. But better than that, I like the people. You know what I mean? It's one thing for people to be gifted, But it's another thing for you to like the person as a person, to know them as good people and to know what they stand for and where their heart really is. And the same thing with Myron Sapp. I met Myron Sapp when he was younger. He was 14, I think, when I met him, before he even got in commission. We called him the little man with the big voice. He was young then, but he had a grown man's voice. And so I call him Marvelous. I got nicknames for all of them. I call Keith Voice. I call Marvin Marvelous. I call Fred Finkel Avenue. That's a street here in Detroit. Mark know what that means. He was Finkel Avenue and I was Linwood. And Fred with that dynamic ear he got. You know, but everybody calls Brooke the Maestro. You know, Mitch is, I called him Velvet. That's Mr. Smooth. I called Carl Russell Tompkins from the Stylistics because of that falsetto. You know, so they all get nicknames in terms of the Deer Republic. That's because we was all so cool. So we played ball together, man. We did a lot together. Traveled together, played ball together. And I think the love and the fellowship is what you heard come across in that music, man.
That makes sense. That makes sense, man. That cohesiveness, that love, that togetherness. You can feel that through the music. And it's something about being able to be in the presence of people that you like. I mean, it's so enjoyable. It's so pleasant. It's not hard. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to be in there with you guys when you were creating, because the Bible talks about iron sharpening iron, and you yourself are a beast, and you're around other beasts. So I can only imagine what that level of creativity was.
The more creativity you had, the better. Like, we had other people that would come in. Like, you had Earl Wright played for Aretha Franklin. You know, his father was he's Michael Wright's brother. Father was the great Bishop Wright. And, you know, Earl was multi-talented. And we all learned something from Tommy, you know, and Rance and the different ones before us, you know, Marvin Winans. And, it was just, man, it was something special. The Clarks, man, it was just really, really something. You had Max Franks, who came in later from Chicago. He brought a certain type of creativity. You know, everybody was constantly bringing something to the table. Even after they had different members of the group to change, you had Marcus Cole, another talented brother. You know, you had Montrell Dearett, Chris Poole. You know, just so much talent, man. So much talent.
Wow. Wow, I would have loved to have been around just to listen, man. That's incredible. Well, I'm going to, before we jump in, you got a new single that dropped in January of 21, and we're going to touch on that. But you actually, your solo career started back in 1991, is that correct?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've done three or four. I think this would be your...
This, my fourth is upcoming. I did self-titled Parks. I did another chapter, Psalms 51. And I did Heart and Soul. And the fourth is upcoming. And you'll hear more from that in about a month or so.
Fantastic. So that single that you released is Want to Be Heard, and I listened to it for the last 3 days, and again, your strength as being an amazing lyricist is out front in your face, and it talks about some of the things, some of the issues that we're having to deal with today. With the police brutality and the social injustice, and you even talk about the pandemic. Let's talk about that song. How long did it take you to come up with this?
Actually, I had a friend whose father passed of COVID, and he's always been like into politics, black movement, for the underdog. And his uncle was Norman Whitfield, who wrote all the songs for The Temptations, Just My Imagination, Ball of Confusion, He also wrote Smiling Faces, a lot of hits for the Temps and Motown era. He was a legend. And that was his uncle, but his uncle's brother, which was his father, passed to COVID. And they sent him in a tailspin. And he called me one day and he said he wanted to do a song. We had did a song, political song for Obama, and it was called Unity. He said, well, I want to redo it. I said, well, I tell you what, I said, I'll do it for you, because I wanted him to get back into what he was doing. And I told him, I said, man, I'll do it for you. I said, you get studio time, and I said, I'll redo your song for him. I said, well, I said, I'll get the guy that plays for me, which was Mo Woodsett, and not knowing that he knew Mo too. And me and Mo went in, and I told Mo, you know, what kind of beat I wanted. I said, I just wanted to be, if Marvin Gaye was here, let's pay tribute to, like, what's going on. Mercy, mm-hmm. Mercy Me. You know, let's give it a feel that will put people in that mind. And that, and Mo did the track, and he did the track. He thinks like a singer. So I hummed the melodies. I didn't have any words. I just hummed the melody. We got the beats. He played. And when he left, I sat down and I went in the booth and I just did the background. And I did the background. I did the hook and the B section. And then I came back because I had, I got sick. And I thought I had COVID, but I didn't. You know, I just had bad flu. And I came back 2 weeks later and I wrote the verses. So it didn't take long, because when I'm inspired, melodies just come, and he just takes me to a place. And when he takes me to that place and I think about the things that were going on, I asked the guy what he wanted to talk about. I said, I know what I want to talk about. He said, look, do it like you do it. He said, just cover everything that's going on today. I said, I got you. I said, because I've been thinking about it. I want to deal with all the issues here. And I said, I want to awaken the social consciousness of people and let them have a return to spirituality. Because to me, we can have uniformity by linking arms together or joining the march, but the true unity comes with the spirit of love. Without the spirit of love, there's no true unity. You just have uniformity.
Yes, sir. You're right.
So I wanted to tap into that and to let everybody know that the only thing that can unite us is love. So I wanted to keep the issues beforehand. And what he really wanted it for, he wanted it for a campaign for Joe Biden, because he had connections with those people. And so he wanted to use the song for that. That's what I originally did the song for. I just wrote the song because I told the Lord when I was driving, I said, you know, politics is one thing. And I know politics is the, you know, it just means the, it means social order. I don't have a problem with social order, but I do have the problem with the abuse of it, you know?
Right.
And so I asked the Lord to give me what to say, and that's what he laid in my heart. And what turns out, when they had the insurrection there, he said he had a problem getting through the channels for the Biden campaign. And I told him, I said, well, my thing is, I'm trying to get a message to the world, from Joe Biden to anybody else, you know, because God puts one up and takes another one down, but the heart of the king is in his hand. But he said the government should rest upon his shoulders. So I view myself as a representative and an ambassador for him, with a message to the kings from the King of Kings. And that was my mindset, to whoever heard it, to pay attention, to say, this is what we're saying, man. It's people frustrated, it's people this, and all the things that needed to be covered of what people wanted to say. You want to know why they're crying out? This is why they're crying out. And then I started thinking, and I told him, I said, you know, that's why you hear me say, I always say that saying, I'm trying to be the change I want to see. And why I put it in the song, because that's what I'm doing. And I told them, be the change you want to see. And we may can't impact Congress, we may can't impact those things, but we can impact our families. We can be a better father. We can bring spirituality and the spiritual consciousness back to our people, where God used us and was always with us. We could bring us back to the place where we know that our forefathers fought hard and went through so much, and we know without the love of God, we wouldn't even be here. You know, that same thing that caused those slaves to write those Negro spirituals in the field, and we were learning a new language. How did we learn those words? How did we know those harmonies? How did we do it? God was with us.
That's right.
I'm trying to let them recall the things from the annals of time and history and cause them to help us now in our present to get us to our future.
Wow. Well, Parks, man, you're so deep. I mean, you're on a whole nother level. This is some awesome stuff. I just want our audience to listen to hear a few of your words here. It says, voices, and I'm talking about the song, Want to Be Heard. Voices crying out, want to be heard. We can talk about it, but actions speak louder than words. Everybody's got their own opinion where the common ground is in agreement. Be the change that you want to see. I believe in unity. I believe in you. And I know we can change the world with the unity. We can make a difference, you and me. And you even mentioned 2 Chronicles 7:14 in that song. If my people which are called by my name will humble themselves. Man, that is so powerful. That's so anointed right there, man. But this song right here, man, this speaks to all of what we've been dealing with in the last few years, man. You did a wonderful job of capturing from the, like I mentioned earlier, the police brutality, the pandemic. Yeah, I mean, just these voices that are crying out with frustration that's happening all over our country. Phenomenal. That's phenomenal, man. I really appreciate that.
Oh, man, that's like my pastor used to tell me all the time. He said, God don't shoot blanks. So I give all honor to him, man. And I'm just glad to be a vessel and to send a message. And I appreciate the support of everyone and the prayers of everyone. And I want to say thanks to everyone who has given me support down through the years.
And we're going to keep on supporting you, man. Where can we get this single, man? Tell us where we can pick it up.
I think it's on Spotify. Every major place that you can download is there. You know, it's there. I think it's Spotify, Amazon. It's at least 3 or 4 of them. So okay. you just type it in, want to be heard, and it'll take you to where you can purchase it. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Y'all heard it here. Want to be heard. Should be on all the digital platforms. Download this song. You will be blessed tremendously. Parks, I will tell you this. God makes some special people, and you, my friend, are special. I believe God is strategic in that he placed you in an area, and I'm one of the few preachers that will say this. I believe God gave you the gift, the influence, to stand on both sides, both secular and gospel, and be a vessel to bring souls to him. So I commend you for the work that you've done, the work that you are doing, and I just want to tell you to keep on doing it, man, because you're doing a marvelous job, and we're behind you 100%.
I received that word too, Bishop, and I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. You're very welcome. Before I let you go, all of my guests, I have them to share or to give some of advice to upcoming artists or songwriters. What could you download into our new generation that could help carry them on over to the next level?
I think study your history. Keep your spirituality and your passion and be authentic. Be authentic. You know, a lot of people, they write things, but they're disingenuous. And I think this is the time where God is separating the authentic from the disingenuous. So they love to have the saying, keeping it real. Do just that. Be authentic.
Wow.
Keep your passion. And don't forget the source of where your gift comes from. And as long as you keep it pure and uncontaminated, you can look for the blessings of God and the message to travel, because it's his word and it's in the spirit of love.
That is phenomenal advice. Keep it authentic. Don't forget the source. Keep it real. Study your history. Thank you so much, Parks. thank you, our listeners, for listening to the James Bishop Tubman Radio Show on GBGRadio.com. Until the next time, God bless you and bye-bye. La-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-